it's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full-auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Valentine's Day today, and it is most likely in full swing all across the country by the time you hear this message. Valentine's Day was allegedly something to do with St. Valentine. I believe St. Valentine was actually probably a woman who said, you know, I want my man to really cater to me today, and he's going to put up with all of my static and kiss my butt, kiss my feet, take me out to dinner, wine and dine me, and I don't want to hear any garbage about it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to live on this day for, you know, a good couple of weeks, one beforehand, one afterwards, and it better be perfect or you're going to hear about it until next Valentine's Day. So, with that in mind, knowing exactly what to expect from my experiences in life, my girlfriend and I will be spending the next couple of nights in Vegas, actually, and going to see Phantom of the Opera, doing the gondola ride, big fancy dinner, all this wonderful stuff. It was Christmas 14 months ago, the day after Christmas or 2 days after Christmas. We're out shopping, getting some of the after Christmas sales, and she happened to come across this formal evening gown, which she absolutely had to have. One of those moments where your woman looks at something and you hear the followed by the, oh my God, afterwards. So, of course, she bought the gown, has had nowhere to wear it, is so enthralled with it that every couple of months she puts it on, wears it around the house for about 5 minutes, takes it off, puts it away. So, figured that Valentine's Day, gondola rides, and Phantom of the Opera over at the Venetian Hotel in Vegas, where they have, it's basically a copy of Venice, where you can take little gondola rides under the bridges and everything, and the guy sings to you. Figured that that was a good enough excuse to so she could bust out the dress. So, paying my dues, taking care of the maintenance tonight. Important information coming to you from Federal Ammunition. Now, Federal, of course, a big ammunition company. And I have gotten several emails on this. It has come out in a number of news releases. I actually have the news release, the press release, from Federal and American Eagle. American Eagle, you may be familiar with. It is the red box with an eagle on the left side. This is for all 45 ACP ammunition. Now, let me read this to you. Certain lots of recently manufactured 45 auto ammunition may contain an incorrect propellant charge. Use of the product from these lots may result in firearm damage and possible serious injury. Now, that's to say that it's most likely too hot of a charge. See, do not use products from the following lots. So prepare to copy this or go online to 2aradio.com and rewind the show at the end and listen to this. Federal Ammunition Lots 38X628 through lot number 38X765. Additionally, lot 38T as in Tom, 401 through 38T414. If you have in your possession any 45 auto with the following brand names and part numbers, check to see if your ammunition package contains the above lot numbers that we just informed you about. American Eagle, that would be AE as in Adam Expert, 45A. Also, AE45, N as in Nancy, 1. Or AE45A250. Let's see, the Federal Champion, which would be WM, as in Mary, 5233. Also, the Federal Gold Medal, GM, as in Mary, 45B, as in Bill. Also, the federal high shock, not hydro shock, but high shock. 45C, as in Charlie, and 45D, as in dog, as well as the federal personal defense ammunition. C, as in Charlie, 45C, as in Charlie, and C, 45D, as in dog. If you possess any ammunition from any of these lots or have any questions concerning the warning, you can call federal at one of the two following numbers, 800-831-0850 or 800-322-2345 and ask for product service. Federal will provide replacement products and will cover the cost of returning the affected product. So, some people might be interested in shooting the heck out of that stuff, see if they can get an injury, and then go ahead and sue the company. Guys, at the risk of personal injury, loss of limb, potentially, something hitting an artery, bleeding out, and potential loss of life, please don't ever attempt something like that so you can just call the local ambulance chaser and file a multi-million dollar lawsuit. They put out the information. Don't shoot it. Any of that information that you have on any of this stuff, send it back to federal. If you want to find out more information, just Google up federal ammunition recall and you'll get the information. Again, just Google up, search ask.com, Yahoo, whatever, federal ammunition recall, and that information should come to you. Now, I have experienced lousy ammunition coming out of some of the Winchester white box purchased in the 100-round packs at Walmart in years past. I've seen primers put in the wrong way. I have seen the casings, when the bullet is put into the neck, peeled back down in there. Bullets in backwards. I understand that Winchester's handled that. As a matter of fact, about 2 years ago at the SHOT Show, maybe it was 3 years ago at the SHOT Show, in fact. It was 3 years ago at the SHOT Show. I brought this to the attention of Winchester and actually spoke with the, I think he was the vice president in charge of quality control at there at the SHOT Show. And understandably, he was alarmed to hear this information. And I haven't seen any issues with that white box coming out since then. However, I'm one of those guys, burn me once, I really don't want to goof with you. And luckily for me, the ammunition wasn't the stuff that I had purchased. It was students that had come to classes. Again, it's one of these things where Americans will buy really, really expensive guns and put the cheapest ammunition we can possibly find through it. And if it's a rifle, put the cheapest scope we can get from, like, BSA or who knows what. Anyhow, if you have any of that federal ammunition, please check it. Please check it closely and carefully, anything that you've ordered. You may have bought some stuff in bulk. You may just have a few things lying around. It's newer stuff, so it's stuff you would have bought in the last few months. All right, guys, stay tuned. We've got plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break. This month, we're celebrating Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday. Ronald Reagan, probably the, at least in my opinion, the last great American president we may ever see when it comes to someone who was, he was referred to as the great communicator, originally a liberal, originally a Democrat, as a matter of fact, was actually the president of the Screen Actors Guild, the Actors Union, back in the 50s, early 60s, I believe it was. And realized when he got out of film, he ended up being a spokesman for General Electric and learned a lot of things. And in that process of 3 or 4 years working for General Electric as kind of a spokesman and going around the country and speaking, really realized where the liberal movement was all wrong, became conservative, ran for governor of California, and won. Immediately, within 2 years of being in the governor's seat, he was running for president, didn't fare so well. Tried again in 76, did not win. And again in 80, and finally he won. He left 1972 out. So he ran in 68, 72, 76, I'm sorry, 68, 76, and 80. Of course, re-election 84. So a lot of people don't really understand some of the background of Ronald Reagan. And since this is Second Amendment Radio, I'm going to read to you a news story that I dug up from June 7th, 2004. Now, Reagan passed away. He died back in 2004. So here is a news article that came out from then. It's entitled, Reagan was a hero to an Iowa woman, a nursing student who was rescued from a mugger by Ronald Reagan. Let's see. Former President Reagan is known as the great communicator, but one Iowa woman will always know him as her hero. Melba King was a 22-year-old nursing student in Des Moines in 1933. She was walking home one autumn night when a mugger came up behind her with a gun and demanded her money. At that moment, Ronald Reagan, who was a Des Moines radio sportscaster at the time, came to her rescue. Reagan pointed a .45 caliber revolver at the robber from the window of his second floor rented room. And he said, "Leave her alone or I'll shoot you right between the shoulders," King told KCCI. Reagan scared the man off and calmed King's nerves. Then the future president said he would walk King home. King didn't see Reagan again until 1984 when Iowa Governor Terry Branstad heard her story and invited her to an Iowa caucus campaign event. After King and Reagan hugged on stage, Reagan laughed and said to the crowd, "This is the first time I've had a chance to tell you the gun was empty. I didn't have any cartridges. If you hadn't run, let's see, if he hadn't run what I told him to, I was going to have to throw it at him." King's rescue became a national news story. The phone rang constantly, King said. All the media attention caused Reagan and King to stay in touch. The two families exchanged cards on birthdays, holidays, and during times of sickness and grief. The Reagans helped King when she lost her husband Harold in 1987, and now she will send Nancy Reagan a sympathy note, because again, this is from 2004, after Reagan passed away. So how cool is that, huh? Reagan used a gun to stop a bad guy. Of course, it's funny that he says he didn't have any rounds in the gun, but when you're staring down a rather large diameter muzzle, you don't generally look into the cylinders at night to see if there's anything back in there. You just tuck tail and run. It's usually a fight or flight scenario, but when somebody's got the drop on you and you're taking the lower road, he's taking the higher road, and on top of that, you've got somebody of a superior force from an elevated position, you don't normally goof around with that. You'd tuck tail and run. So good for Ronald Reagan. That's just cool. I remember hearing something about this years ago, so we dug this story up and decided to share it with you today. So good. Happy birthday month to Ronald Reagan, 100 years old. Let's see. An FBI agent has turned ACLU counsel. Now, you might think this doesn't sound so good. An FBI agent left the FBI and now he's an attorney for the ACLU. Well, this is what he's saying. He's saying that the feds are spying on citizens based on religion and politics. So let me read this story. Mike German was fired by the FBI for exposing their cover-up. Talk about whistleblower protection, right? Not at all. He now works for the ACLU and is speaking out about how the government targets people based on religion and politics with very little oversight. Now, feds have little respect for our privacy or the Constitution. And the police, they say, are watching you. If you're the wrong religion, they'll spy on your every move. If you voice the wrong political opinion, they'll be watching you, according to Mike German. Again, a 16-year veteran with the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is happening right here in the U.S. Mike German has become the FBI's worst nightmare. Fed up with the abuse of privacy he was seeing, he complained to higher authority and was promptly fired by the FBI. Recently, he became the ACLU's policy counsel on national security, immigration, and privacy. and he's speaking up about what he's witnessed. States Mr. German in a recent interview with Network World, he says, "The most disturbing thing we've uncovered in the scope of domestic intelligence activities taking place today. Domestic spying is now being done by a host of federal agencies, FBI, Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, Department of DNI, what is DNI, as well as state and local law enforcement and even private companies. Too often, this spying targets political activity and religious practices. We've documented intelligence activities targeting or obstructing First Amendment protected activities in 33 states and D.C. He says that this Orwellian atmosphere could leave the U.S. a far different beast than the proud beacon of freedom it once was. He states, quote, "The biggest threat is that the increased surveillance of political activity will create a chilling effect that will dissuade people from exercising their rights, which will cause significant harm to participatory democracy." Well, he's absolutely right. He states that the war on terror will continue to serve as an excuse for federal agencies to trample civil liberties. Isn't it interesting that this comes out at the same time that the Patriot Act has died in the House? However, it's going to come back. It needed a two-thirds majority in the way that they brought it back. It didn't pass. When they just come up for a simple majority, it will pass again. Isn't it interesting? He says, German says that there are no clear-cut guidelines as to when you get put on a watch list and are spied on by federal agents. It's impossible to find out if you're on a list and equally impossible to dispute or ask to be removed from a list. He also blasts TSA's enhanced pat-down procedures and body scanners, calling them unreasonable invasions of privacy that do not enhance security. Given the Supreme Court's interpretation that privacy is a fundamental human right and thus constitutionally protected by the Ninth Amendment, and given the First Amendment's protections concerning freedom of speech and religion, Mr. German's claims are alarming. Are U.S. federal employees deliberately spying on citizens and violating their rights without the slightest legal accusation? Well, it'd be easy to dismiss Mr. German's claims as the words of a disgruntled employee, but Mr. German's story of his departure from the agency is going to be coming at you after this break, coming up in the next 40 seconds. So, we're going to leave that carrot dangling out there and get back to his story as soon as we come back from this upcoming break. You don't want to go anywhere, guys, because this is now coming from one of the horse's mouths that was involved in this sort of governmental abuse. So stay tuned. We'll get to this right after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Attention all long-range precision riflemen and long-distance shooting hunters. Come and join other like-minded long-range riflemen this April for the Bill Carnes 2A Radio Precision Rifle Course being held just outside Las Vegas, Nevada. This is your chance to put your gear to the test and perfect your long-range rifle shooting skills. Think of it as Sniper 101. We'll be collecting repeatable data from 100 yards out to 1,000 yards and beyond. Imagine having confirmed repeatable data for your rifle and the round you choose in 50-yard increments out to the furthest limit of your trajectories. You'll learn the secrets of the proper way to clean and maintain your precision rifle for extended life and accuracy well beyond your expectations. You'll also have the opportunity to shoot a 50-caliber sniper rifle and hit a target at 1 mile. To find out more, go to victoryshoot.org. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Visit victoryshoot.org today. That's victoryshoot.org.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Hey guys, welcome back. So, we're going to now get to former FBI agent German's claims as to the story of his departure from the FBI. He says, I left the FBI when the DOJ Inspector General failed to investigate an FBI cover-up of a failed FBI counterterrorism investigation, I reported, or protect me from official retaliation that resulted. I reported the information to Senator Grassley and resigned. Grassley put pressure on the IG, and almost 2 years later, the IG issued a report that showed the FBI falsified and backdated records about the case and retaliated against me for reporting it. I joined the ACLU 2 years later because I knew from my counterterrorism work and protecting civil liberties and keeping law enforcement accountable is what keeps Americans safe from terrorism and other crime. Now, Mr. German was clearly vindicated in the case that led to his dismissal. The fact that the FBI tried to cover up its own wrongdoing and then punished Mr. German certainly damages its credibility and offers support for Mr. German's claims. Now, this is the sort of thing that happens every single day. It is standard operating procedure. People within higher-end federal agencies sit around and try to decide how to accomplish what it is they want to accomplish. Not whether or not it's legal, not whether or not it's constitutional, not whether or not it's actually even right, and whether or not they're actually wrong. All they want to do is justify their means to an end. That is the way that government operates. Not just the federal government. I live in the small town of Pahrump, Nevada. We have a little town board. Now, historically, the town board has violated their own town provisions because years later they want to switch gears and go on do something else. Forget about what the previous town board members voted on 5, 10, 15 years ago. Forget about that town ordinance. We're going to pass our own in violation of the old one because that's where we want to go. We're going to justify our means to an end. So it's not just on the federal level. It's everywhere. Justifying a means to an end, whether it's right or not. It doesn't seem like anybody has it in their ability to any longer say, you know something? I was wrong. Or I am wrong. And it's time to fess up and get things handled. No, it's perpetrating the lie, carrying on with it, conspiring to cover things up, and make it look like you were right all along. Even though you know that something is wrong. Because in the litigious society of today, it's not what's really going on, it's what can be proved as to what's going on. If the FBI is going so far as to backdate files and information and cover things up, every single individual involved in that should first be immediately fired. And after being fired, have a stipulation that they are no longer ever allowed to hold a position within any federal government agency whatsoever. Additionally, because they were fired over a crime being committed and a crime dealing with unconstitutional acts, any and all sort of pensions should be canceled. They should be kicked out on the street. And they should be prosecuted. And in my world, just in my world, if you work for the government or you're an elected official or you're an appointed official or you're acting in the position of someone who should be an official, is in a temporary spot, and you violate somebody's liberties, somebody's rights, you violate the constitutional rights of any American, and you are found guilty of it, whatever sentence is handed down should be automatically tripled. Absolutely automatically tripled. And on top of that, at no time again and for the rest of your life will you be allowed to either run for elected office, be hired or even contracted with any sort of federal agency, loss of all pension, again, triple the time, triple the sentence. All of that should be down for everybody in the government system, even at a state or local level. If your mayor gets convicted of some sort of a crime, something along the lines of abuse of their office, the mayor should no longer ever be allowed to work for the city, the county, the state, feds, nothing. No public payroll whatsoever should be part of the sentence. And you agree to that when you take your oath of office. If you violate your oath of office and you're convicted of a crime dealing with your office, these are the punishments. Do you accept those conditions? Matter of fact, that should be done when you run for office if it happens to be an elected position. Anyone else, when you sign up to be hired or if you sign up to appoint, whatever, should all be part of your contract. And yes, I accept triple the sentence. Period. Y'all might remember a news story that came out last year, middle of last year, about how the American-built variants of the M1 rifle in the hands of South Korea. South Korea wanted to send those back to the U.S. to raise some money for their army, to sell them back to the U.S. They wanted to raise a few bucks. Well, of course, Obama, through his regime, came out and said, nope, that's not good for this country. We won't allow it. It could increase crime rates. Well, Representative Danny Rehberg sponsored legislation to allow the import of the legal M1 semi-automatic rifles. That's the guy from Montana. Montana's Congressman Danny Rehberg sponsored the legislation to compel the State Department to allow the importation of some 857,470 lawful M1 semi-automatic rifles back into the United States. The rifles were relics from the Korean War, which are being sold by South Korea in an effort to raise money for its military. These rifles would be made available to the public as well as to museums and historical societies. Here's a quote. Whether it's importing legal rifles or blaming legal rifle sales for the violence of Mexican drug criminals, this State Department has appointed itself as the spearhead of regulatory gun control in America, says Rehberg, a member of the Second Amendment Task Force. He says, continues by saying, Americans should not apologize for our freedom. We shouldn't feel bad for insisting that our government respect our rights. And we absolutely should not be allowing the administration to restrict the importation of legal guns on the whim of an anti-gun bureaucracy. In its decision to block the importation of these rifles, the State Department claimed that the M1s, quote, could potentially be exploited for illicit purposes, end quote. Possession of these firearms by Americans is lawful, and the purchasers would have to be approved through the National Instant Check System used for all domestic firearms purchases. Could potentially be exploited for illicit purposes. Well, maybe that means we shouldn't import any vehicles from any other country, because a drunk might buy, borrow, rent, or steal one of those cars, go get drunk, get back in that car, and then go wreak havoc, run people over, and cause death and serious bodily injury, let alone a whole bunch of property damage. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now, Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
You know, I have to tell you a little bit of a funny story that happened over the weekend. My refrigerator at home has just been kind of an aging piece of junk. It's got to be 15 years old or so. And no ice, no water. It's rather small. It's maybe like, I don't know, 18 cubic feet or something like that. And the new ones now are up to like 29 cubic feet. Anyhow, so I go online and I go on Craigslist and there's a guy that's selling a nice refrigerator that's fitting the demographic of the refrigerator I want. It's got the stuff that I'm looking for in a fridge. And evidently this guy got a hold of it. It used to be a floor model on, I don't know, like maybe on Lowe's floor, Home Depot's floor, something like that. So this guy got some sort of a screaming bargain deal on this thing. And he's offering it for under half price with a 30-day warranty, blotted out. Still got a manufacturer's warranty on it. Anyhow, and I guess the guy does this. It's his own thing. He does it on the side. And so he just does this on the side and makes a few extra bucks. So I make a deal. I go down there with a trailer of a buddy's mine, and I go down there on Saturday, and I meet this guy. We meet at the storage unit where everything he has everything, and we go inside, and we're looking around, and he says to me, he goes, "Have you ever seen a show called Top Shot?" And I kind of looked at him and squinted and tilted my head a little bit to the side, and I said, isn't that shooting competition show they have, like, on History Channel or something?" He says, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Yeah, I'm familiar with that show, sure." And he says, "You look just like a guy that's on that." "Really? I do?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Which dude?" And he goes, "You know, I don't remember the guy's name." Now, keep in mind, I'd already introduced myself to the guy and told him my name is Bill. And just 3 or 4 minutes before this conversation is taking place. And I said, "You know, I've heard the same thing about the guy who's actually from the Vegas area, lives out in Pahrump." I'd also told him that I was driving in from Pahrump. So he knows my name is Bill. He knows I live in Pahrump. And he also knows that I look like the guy in Top Shot. So we're not putting two and two and two together just yet. So I'm having a little bit of fun with the guy. He's a nice guy, but I'm having a little bit of fun just because I can. So I said, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, yeah, that's the guy." I said, "Yeah, that same guy that lived out in Pahrump, right?" And he goes, "Yeah." So I give him a look, just kind of like opening my eyes real big and nodding my head like, "Yeah, come on, draw the kid. Come on, let's do it." And so then he starts looking at me a little closer. He's like, "No. Have you met the guy?" Like, "It's me, man. It's me." "No way. Really? Yeah, yeah, it's me. You know, the guy that I look like the guy who was on Top Shot. I live in the same town and I have the same name. It's 2 plus 2 plus 2. I mean, yeah, it was me." So anyhow, we had a good conversation. It was fun. And it was interesting because he actually, the guy's originally from, the Midwest, moved out to the Vegas area within the last, I don't know, few years. And he says that because of Top Shot, his girlfriend got interested in shooting when before she hadn't been, which is good. It's interesting that I was talking with Ian Harrison, who's the champion of Top Shot Season 1. He is America's Top Shot from Season 1. I spoke with him at the SHOT Show. You may have heard the interview that we played. And Ian said that the demographics that came back from watching the final episode of Top Shot was something like over 40% of the viewers were women, which is a really untapped research. You've got women that are about half of America's population, half of the world's population, but yet very few of them actually shoot or really are concerned about having a gun for any sort of self-protection. It's just, it seems as though historically guns are considered a little bit more big and bad, more machoistic, more manly. But women are starting to realize that although that might be the perception, it really isn't necessarily the case in fact. So it's interesting. It was nice to hear that because of the show, he was getting back into shooting, and his girlfriend had an interest in getting into shooting, so that was nice. I gave him my card and told him to keep in touch. Nice guy. Very nice guy. And by the way, the refrigerator is just flipping awesome. Couldn't be happier. It was really nice. I ended up getting a refrigerator for about a third of the retail price. And it is new. It was just sitting on there as a floor model. Hasn't been abused. Doesn't have any spills. Hasn't had a bunch of water run through it or ice or anything. It's only been plugged in. And, you know, they don't even keep the things that cold in the floors because they don't want to burn up all the electricity. It's got the LED lighting, a lot of really neat features. It's actually got it's got two separate ice makers. I don't know, it was really great. Okay, enough about the refrigerator and that story about Top Shot. It's kind of funny. I run into people all the time. As a matter of fact, about a month ago, a guy at a gas station sees me and goes, "Hey, that's Bill." I look around, I'm like, "Do I know you? Oh, I saw you on Top Shot, man. It was great. I got in trouble for watching the show on my laptop in physics class or whatever he was in college. It was pretty funny." Well, let's see. The new Congress is about to take its first whack at the D.C. gun laws. Keep in mind that the House of Representatives actually has ultimate control over the laws in Washington, D.C. They have a mayor, they have city council, and over the years they've usurped a little bit of congressional authority over to the mayor and city council. And then after things like the whole Marion Barry incident, they took some of that control back. But they actually hold all the control. They can literally disband the city council and mayor. Well, let's see. The first concrete attempts to undo city gun laws has hit the congressional hopper. Representative Mike Ross, Democrat out of Arkansas, and Representative Jim Jordan, Republican out of Ohio, have introduced the Second Amendment Enforcement Act, which is largely the same as a measure that failed to gain support in the previously Democrat-controlled Congress. Now, keep in mind, piece of legislation jointly introduced by a Democrat and a Republican because they know what's right. With a new Republican majority in the lower house, the bill will likely encounter few obstacles from the chamber's leadership. Jordan is the leader of the influential Republican Study Committee. Ross takes over as the lead Democrat sponsor of the bill from Travis Childress, Democrat out of Mississippi, who was defeated in November. The bill, per release from Ross's office, quote, would repeal the D.C. semi-automatic gun ban, restore the right of self-defense in the home, authorize D.C. residents to purchase firearms and ammunition, repeal overly restrictive registration requirements, and ensure the firearms may be transported and carried for legitimate purposes. In other words, district residents would encounter far fewer obstacles to purchasing and keeping a gun in the city. A Washington Post analysis, of city records published on Monday, last Monday, that showed that city residents have registered more than 1,400 firearms since July 2008 when handgun ownership was allowed for the first time in some 40 years pursuant to a Supreme Court ruling. The legislation comes with the strong backing of the NRA. Here's a quote. "Today, self-defense in the District of Columbia is a luxury item," said Chris Crox, the NRA's top lobbyist in the Ross release. He says, quote, "The hefty fees and almost insurmountable mountain of red tape put in place by the D.C. mayor and city council makes it near impossible for the average D.C. resident to have a firearm in their home to defend themselves." And he's absolutely right. We don't charge for exercising other guaranteed rights, but we do for Second Amendment right? Unreal. District Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton assailed the measure in a release of her own today. She vowed to fight the measure, quote, "They underestimate our residents," if they think this city will tolerate autocratic rule from Congress any more than the Jordan and Ross districts would tolerate dictatorship from Congress on local matters. Congressional observers widely expect the same sort of D.C. gun measure is likely to pass the current Congress, though a standalone bill may not be the most likely avenue for it. While the House bill might have a clear path to the floor, a Senate bill is unlikely to have leadership and committee support. But there's little doubt for a Senate floor vote on D.C. gun laws that would succeed. When a D.C. voting right measure came to the floor of a Democratic Senate in 2009, senators voted overwhelmingly to attach a gun provision before final passage. As for the feelings of district residents themselves, the latest poll on the issue from January 2008 found that 4 out of 5 respondents felt that controlling gun ownership outweighed the need to protecting the right of Americans to own guns. More than 3/4 of residents approved the city's gun laws at this time, which banned private ownership of handguns. The commie scumbags.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.